Okay, today's daf is Shabbat daf Ayin Tet. We're at the bottom of Ayin Chet. Amud Bet at Tanrabanan Motzi Shtar Chov Ad Shelo Paro Chayv Mishparo Pater. So someone takes out a loan document, a document that details the money that someone lent to someone else. If it has not yet been paid, then you're going to be Chayv because it's a useful document. You need it to get paid. But if it's already been paid, then you're Pater because it's useless, right? The document served its function. It no longer has a function. You didn't take out anything of any use on Shabbat. That's where you're going to be Pater. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afish Paro Chayv Mishtzarechlo. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, no, wants to take it out, you're going to be chayev because there's still need for that document. It still has purpose, and therefore you're taking out something on Shabbat that has purpose, and you're going to be chayev. My benayu, what actually point are they arguing over here? Well, he does need it. He doesn't need it. Just, you know, does he need it or not? What are they arguing about? Amar Rav Yosef asur lashot shtar parua ika benayu. Rabbanan savri asur lashot shtar parua. Rabbi Yehuda savri mutar lashot shtar parua. The point of the machloket is to whether or not you are allowed to hold on to a paid off document. Could be that you're not allowed to hold on to a paid off document because maybe it's going to get confusing. Someone's going to find it and assume maybe it wasn't paid. You're going to try to get paid again. So you're not allowed to hold on to it. And if it's usher to hold on to it, then clearly it has no function. Because if it had a function, if it had a purpose to you, then you'd be allowed to keep it for that function. If you're not allowed to keep it, that means that it has no function. In which case, according to the Tanakama, you would say that, that if it's usher to hold on to it, it has no function, therefore it's worthless and you're potter for carrying it on Shabbat. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if you're allowed to hold on to it, it's because it has a function and the you'd be chayev to take for taking it out on Shabbat because it clearly has a purpose. Abaye Amar dechule alma asur lashot shtar parua v'achab mod b'shtar shechatvo shtar chakaymo kamiflagi. According to Abaye, everyone agrees that you are not allowed to hold on to a paid off document. But the point of machloket is like this: the question is, once the borrower has admitted to writing that document, meaning has admitted at some point that he owed money to this person, does that person, the lender, still need to do what's called kiyum shtarot? Does he need to go to the witnesses on the document to testify this is a valid document, and he is then allowed to collect with that document? That's their point of machloket. If the borrower says, yeah, I wrote that document, is that all you need in order to require him to pay money? Or even if he says, yeah, I wrote that document, in theory, he could still say later, yeah, but I wrote that document, but I already paid it back, in which case, you still need to go, be mekayim the shtar. Now, it's important to mention that we are talking about a specific case, which is, you cannot go be mekayim the shtar. Maybe the witness has died, maybe they may have early, yeah, you can't mekayim the shtar. You cannot produce any evidence that this shtar was written by Edut outside of the person who wrote it, the borrower. Sorry. So that is the case that we're dealing with, where you cannot be mekayim the shtar. And now let's go through the machloket. Tana kama savar moda b'shtar shekatvo tzarich lekayim over b'yuda savar moda b'shtar shekatvo ein tzarich lekayim. According to the Tana kama, if someone admits to this shtar, if someone admits that he wrote the shtar, still the lender, if the borrower admits to having written the shtar, still the lender needs to do a kiyum shtarot, right? But he can't do the kiyum shtarot, right? We just spoke about that. In which case, this document is now useless, right? Because he cannot force the borrower to pay unless he does a kiyum shtarot, which he cannot do. So then it's useless. He can't do anything with it. According to Rabbi Yehuda, once the borrower admitted to having owed money, you don't need to do a kiyum beyond that point. So it doesn't matter that he can't be mekayim the shtar. Just by the borrower admitting that he owed money, this shtar can now be used to force him to pay because the borrower admitted to writing it. In which case, it's a very useful shtar. It's the shtar that based on his own admission, can now be used to make the borrower pay. And if it has use, then it cannot be taken out on Shabbat. Umay adshelo paro mishaparo. Okay, then what did the Mishnah mean when it says that if he didn't pay, if he did pay yet, or if he didn't pay yet, right? Clearly, the case that we're talking about is a case where he hasn't yet paid, because we're talking about whether the shtar can be used to make him pay. The shtar can only be used to make him pay in a case where he has not yet paid. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. No, what we mean is until the borrower says, I paid back or I did not pay back. Because if he says I paid back and you're the Tanakama, great, you have nothing you can do at this point. But if he says I did not pay back, then you have something you can do. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, regardless of whether he says I paid or I didn't pay, if he admitted to writing it, you can use the document to make him pay. And that's why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it has purpose regardless. Rava says a different version. He says, actually, everyone agrees that you still need to do a kiyum, right? If he, even though he admitted to having written the shtar, you still need to do a kiyum shtar. V'hacha bekotvin shovar kamiflagi tanakama savar kotvin shovar avar yudas savar ein kotvin shovar. So what they're really arguing as to whether or not we allow the lender to write a receipt that says that that the loan was paid, if he is not able to show someone the loan document, right? According to the Tanakama, the lender is allowed to write this write this receipt, and therefore the moment the document was paid and there is a receipt for it, you really don't need the document at all. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, you may not write a receipt, in which case you always need to hang on to this document in order to prove that it was paid. All right, you always need to hang on to the document because you can't write a receipt for the document. Rav Ashi Amar Mipnei Shetzarich Lar Oto LeBalchov Sheni De Amar Le Chazi Gavur De Para Ani. So according to Rav Ashi, no, it's like this, right? The borrower wants to hold on to this document to show it to a second balchov. Why? It's like credit, right? You have you want to go for a loan, and this is the second loan that you're going for, and the person who's considering giving you this loan is like, well, how can I trust that you're going to pay it back? And he says, well, look, I'm a guy who pays back his loans, right? So you can see by the fact that I have this document that the last guy who gave me a loan, I paid him back, and you can trust me as well. So he wants to hold on to it, right? So that's why he would want to hold on to the document. That's the use that it has. Okay, back to the Mishnah. Or kidelasot, right? So enough leather, right, to make an amulet. Ba mine rava merav nachman hamotzi or bechama amar lo kidetnan or kidelasot kimia, right? So Rava asked Rav Nachman, how much leather do you need to take out in order to be chayev? And Rav Nachman says, enough to make an amulet, as we said. Hameabdo bechama amar le lo shna. So then he asked, okay, how much leather where if you tanned the leather, would you be chayev for tanning? Meaning, if you tan a speck of leather, are you chayev, or is there a minimum? And Ravacha says, there's no difference. If you tanned enough leather to make an amulet, then you're chayev. Le'abdo bechama. Okay, what if you have not yet, tanned the leather, but you're taking it out in order to tan it? Then how much are you chayev? Meaning, is there a difference between the amount of tanned leather that you take out, which can already be used for an amulet, which you be chayev for, or the amount of, of untanned leather, which in theory you could tan and then use for an amulet? Is there a difference in how, in the minimum shear, that you're gonna be chayev for taking out? Amar le lo shnai. Says to him, no, there's no difference, it's all the same shear. Mina timra. But how do you know that it's all the same shear? Kiditnan, hamilaben vamenapet, vatsoveh, vatoveh, shiro kimelo rochav, sit, kaful. Right? So, because we learned in the Mishnah that someone who whitens the wool, and who untangles the wool, and who dyes the wool, or who spins the wool, the shear is always twice what's called a seat, right? A seat is the difference between the middle finger and the index finger. So twice that amount, is what you're chayev for doing so. Regarding weaving, you have to weave just one seat, right? So now we're going to show why there's a proof for Rav Nachman says, Alma kevan de litvia kai shiura ke tavoy. Hacha nami kevan de la abdo kai shiura kime ubad. Right? So we see that what is the shear for being chayev for whitening wool? It's the same shear for actually tying the wool. So if you're going to be chayev for tying the wool by this amount, then you're going to be chayev for whitening the wool that you wish to tie by the same amount of the wool that you would tie. So it's the same shear. So similar, the same exact thing goes by the leather. Because leather is generally tanned, so if you're going to be chayev this amount for, if you're going to be chayev this amount for tanning the leather, or for taking out tanned leather, then it's going to be the same amount as if you were to take out untanned leather. Because if you take out this amount of untanned leather, well, how much leather do we care about you taking out, even if it's untanned? The amount that you could use if it were tanned, right? Just like we care about if you dye enough string to use it for the amount that you would be chayav for spinning. We care if you take out enough leather that if you would use, if you would tan it, you would use to make a kamiya, right? So we treat the thing, we treat the raw materials like the processed materials, in that if you would use this amount, if this is a significant amount of processed materials, then it's a significant amount of raw materials that you would generally process. Okay, but what if you didn't intend on tanning it? Then is it a different size shear? Meaning, I understand you intend on tanning this leather, then it's going to be the same amount as the tanned leather, because you intend on tanning it. But what if you don't intend on tanning it? Runaka says, no, there's no difference. But do we really not treat the unprocessed materials, the untanned leather, do we really not treat them as any differently, the tanned leather, the untanned leather? Eitave, I can challenge that from the following braita. Hamotzi samanin shiruyin k'dei litzbo behen dugma le'ira. K'dei litzbo behen dugma le'ira. Ve'ilu v'samanim she'en shiruyin. Tenan klipe gozim veklipe rimonin satis ufua kedelit spoa behen beged katan lefi sivacha. Okay, so what we're trying to prove from this is, if you take boiled plants, right, boiled herbs that you would use for dyeing things, right, so then the minimum is of a certain amount, right? The minimum is to like enough cloth to cover up a hole left in like a weaver's patch, right? However, if you took undyed materials, undyed plants, right, or unprocessed plants that you would need to process in order, if you wanted to use them for dyeing, then the shear is bigger, right? But why would we treat the unprocessed plants that are not yet ready to use for dyeing differently than the processed plants that are ready to be used for dyeing? That would seem to parallel the case of the unprocessed leather and the processed leather. Ha itmar Allah, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua, Lafisha Ein Adam Torech, Lishor Tzomanim, Litzvo Ben Dugma Le'ira. Ah, it's because it's not normal for a person to boil these herbs just to create such a small amount of dyed material. If you already have the boiled herbs, then this is the amount of boiled herbs that is significant, because they would be used to dye such a material. But if you don't have the boiled herbs, you wouldn't boil them just to color something so small. And that's why we treat them before and after differently, because you wouldn't boil such a small amount milechatchila. You'd only use such a small amount if it's already boiled. Vahare zarone gina. But now we're going to challenge it from seeds in a garden. De mikame de zarinu tanan zarone gina pachot mikuguge. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira Omer Chamisha. So we said about seeds that you're going to plant, that you'd be chayev for taking out about the size of a dried fig. Rabbi Yehuda says 5 seeds. Vilu bata dezarinu tanan zevel v'chol hadak kedei lizbol bo kelach shel keruv divrei Rabbi Akiva v'chamim omrim kedei lizbol kerisha. Right. So, but after they're already planted. So according to Rabbi Akiva, you're chayev for taking out enough fertilizer to fertilize one stalk of cabbage, and according to Chachamim, it's to fertilize a single leek. But that comes from one seed. You'd only be chayev for taking out 5 seeds, but you'd be chayev for taking out enough fertilizer to treat a plant that comes from only one seed. Is one seed significant, or is it not significant? If it's significant, you should be chayev for taking out one seed. And if it's not significant, then the plant that comes from that seed should not be chayev for taking out enough fertilizer just to treat that one thing. Ha'itmar Allah. Amar Rav Papa, ha dizria, ha dilozria, levishen adam torach lotzi nima achad lozria. Says, yes, we differentiate between whether something before and after something was planted, because you are not going to take out, fertilizer for just one seed. It's just not something you do. However, you would take out fertilizer for one plant that grew from the seed. And because someone would not take out, something for such an unsubstantial amount, we treat it as an unsubstantial amount, as long as it is not yet planted. Meaning, what differentiates between how we treat the unprocessed or the thing at one point of the process as opposed to a later point of the process is whether or not people treat them as significant in their behaviors. You don't treat a seed as significant. You treat a plant that comes from a seed as significant. In which case, what you would carry out for a seed is insignificant. What you would carry out for a what you would carry out for a plant that grew from a seed is significant, right? So it's all about whether or not we are likely to do a significant action for such an insignificant thing. Now we're going to have another challenge. Right, so this is a proof that we saw earlier, which is regarding making clay. They said the following, right? The Chachamim agree that a ravit of wastewater you're chayav for taking out. And then we asked, well, what exactly is wastewater useful for? And we answered, oh, it's useful for making clay out of dirt. And therefore it has use. Ve'ilu batat gabe tanya, right? But then afterward, we taught, tit kedei laso ben pikur, that enough clay in order to make a very small amount, just to make a hole for this, for the melting pot of metals, right? That is a much smaller amount of clay. So again, we brought this proof in the other day, which was to say that how much clay is significant? Well, just enough clay to be memale pikur, right? So that's a very small amount of clay. So that's not a ravit of water produces a lot more clay than that. In which case, we see the clay before it's made and after it's made as different in their size in terms of significance. Hatam namni kide kamrinan kide amran lafisha ein adam toreach legabal datid lasot bo pikur. Yes, same exact thing. A person is not going to make clay from scratch for that small amount. You're only going to make a large amount of clay from scratch. You're only going to make the amount of clay that a ravit of water would produce. And that's why there's a difference there, but that can't be used as a proof that we should treat leather before and after it's treated as any different. Another one. Tashima, the Amar Bechi Bar Ami, Mishmei De'ula, Shalosha Oroten, Matzah V'Chipa V'Diftara. There are three types of leather, right? There's a leather called Matzah, a leather called Chipa, and a leather called Diftara. They're really the same leather. There's just different stages in the treating process. Matzah Kimashmo, De'lo Maliach, V'Delo Kamiach, V'Delo Afitz. Right? So basically, the way that you would treat leather is first you would salt it, and then you would soak it in a mixture of flour and water, and then you would treat it, with a certain type of nut for I think its smoothness or its color. So matzah is without any of these treatments. V'chamash yuro, and how much are you chayav for taking out the matzah leather? Tani Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda kidei latzur bo mishkol ktana, enough to wrap around a small weight. And how big is a small weight? Right, it's 1/4 basically of a measurement, the litra used in pumpadita. Chipa de maliach velo kamiach velo apit. Chipa leather has been salted, but it hasn't been treated with the flour and water, and hasn't been treated with the nuts. V'chamashi uro, and how much is the minimum size you're going to be high for? Kiditana and kidaso kamiach, enough to make a kamiach, to make an amulet. Diftara de maliach v'kamiach v'lo afit. And a diftara is leather which has been treated with salt and has been treated with the flour and water, but it hasn't been treated with the nuts. V'chamashi uro. Okay, now what's the minimum measurement for there? Kedei lichtov alav et aget. Right? Enough that you can write a get on it. Katani mihat kedei latzur bo mishkele ketana. But so we see that there by the matzah you need enough to wrap a small weight in it. V'amar Abaye revi'ed to pumpadita, and Abaye says that is a revi'ed to pumpadita. So clearly we treat tanned leathers differently than untanned leathers, right? This material, the matzah leather, has not been fully processed or not been processed as much as the other leathers, and therefore its size is going to be different. Hatan bebishula. No, that's because the stage that it's in is unfit for making a kamiya or writing a get, right? So that's why it's different. It's still wet. It can't be used for writing at all. And that's why its shear is wrapping around a small weight, because it currently, in its current state, cannot be used for writing. V'hatnan, ha-beged shlosha al shlosha limidras, ha-sak arba al arba, ha-or chamisha al chamisha, mapat shisha al shisha, ben limidras ben limit. Right? So didn't we teach that leather is leather can become tame by 3x3 tfachim, sack are 4x4 tfachim. Sorry, not leather. The cloth is 3x3, sack is 4x4, leather is 5x5, and mat is 6x6. Vitani Allah, and we've taught about it. Habegid vasak ve'ur kishu latuma kach shu lotza. And we taught that. All these things, their shear for contracting tuma is the same shear as being chayav for taking them out on Shabbat. In which case, leather would be 5x5, which is bigger than we taught earlier. Ahu be kurtuvla. No, that's talking about kurtuvla, a certain type of treated leather made for furniture, and it's not fit to be used for things like amulets, and therefore its minimum size is bigger because it's a bigger amount of leather that's going to be significant in terms of making furniture out of it. Klav kedichduv alav parsha katana. Right, so enough parchment that you can write a small parsha on it, which was Kriyat Shema. Reminu klav v'dachsustus kedei lichtov alav mezuzah. But didn't we treat that regarding a parchment and regarding and duchsustus, which is a different type of parchment, a different type of thing that to write on, right? Big enough to write a mezuzah on it, which is two parshiot, as opposed to a tefillin, which is a small parsha, which is one parsha. My mezuzah is tefillin. Yeah, what do we mean by mezuzah? Mezuzah just means a scroll. We mean one scroll of the tefillin, the small one. Shema, the karel of the tefillin mezuzah. But wait, do we see tefillin is ever called mezuzah? In, yeah, actually we do. Vahatanya, by the way, generally Vahatanya rejects what we just said. This is a support. It can be used for both. It's just more rare to be used as a support. Vahatanya retzuat tefillin. Im hatfilin mitamot deyadayim. When the straps of its tefillin are still connected to the tefillin itself, then even the straps can make the hands tame. However, if the straps are separate, then they are not mitamei deyadayim if they're not connected to the tefillin. Hanogei beretzua tahor, right? Or Rav Shimon Omer, hanogei beretzua tahor. So Rav Shimon says that if someone touches the strap, he's tahor. Adji bektitza, until he touches the box itself. Rabbi Zakkai mishmo Omer, but Rabbi Zakkai said in Rabbi Shimon's name, tahor adji gemezuzah atma, that you're going to be tahor until you touch the scroll itself. Oh, there we see that mezuzah is used in reference to a part of the tefillin, and therefore we see that mezuzah is a valid terminology for a parsha of the tefillin. Wait, but doesn't it seem to imply from the second part from the seifa that if we say a klaf in order to write a parsha ketana of the tefillin that which is Shema Yisrael, that the mezuzah is not talking about the tefillin, right? Meaning, if mezuzah was talking about tefillin, then just teach mezuzah in the reisha and the seifa. But from the fact that you're teaching, that you're saying tefillin straight out in the reisha, doesn't that imply that mezuzah is talking about something else, right? Why would it say klav kedei lichtov alav parsha ketana shebe tefillin? Just say klav kedei lichtov alav mezuzah. Why differentiate between the two unless we're talking about different things? Namely, mezuzah, we're talking about the mezuzah we generally recognize, two parshiot that goes on your doorpost, and the tefillin is talking about the tefillin. Hachi ketani. No, rather, this is what it meant to say. Klaf v'dichtustus shirin bechama. So what's the shear of the klaf, and what's the shear of the dichtustus? Dichtustus kedei lichtov alav mezuzah. Klaf kedei lichtov alav parsha ketana shebet tefillin. That the minimum size for a dichtustus is the mezuzah, and the minimum size for a klaf is the tefillin, is a small parsha of tefillin, shishma Yisrael. We're differentiating between two different types of parchments. One is a klaf, one is a dichtustus, and that's why we differentiate. That's why we taught them separately. Amar Rav, dichtustus areiki klaf. According to Rav, however, a duchsustus is the same as a parchment, and therefore their shear is going to be the exact same. Maklav kotvin alav tefillin, av duchsustus kotvin alav tefillin. And how does Rav compare the klav and the duchsustus? Because just like the klav can be used for tefillin, so too the duchsustus can be used for tefillin. In which case, the only reason that we... Meaning, yes, I understand you're confused why we said mezuzah in one place and klaf in another place, but we only did that to introduce the fact that according to one shita, a klav could be used for tefillin and duchsustus for mezuzah, whereas according to Rav, they can be used, according to Rav, even a duchsustus can be used for tefillin, in which case, the shear that we were talking about, we didn't, We didn't teach them differently to say that we were talking about a different shir, one paragraph and two paragraphs. We just taught them differently to bring up derech agav, that some people treat a klaf differently than a duchsustus in terms of what it can be used for writing, but Rav treats a klaf and a duchsustus the same in that they can both be used for tefillin, and therefore their minimum shiur is the same, namely a small parsha of the tefillin. But that's not to say that we are saying that a duchsustus minimum size is two parshiot. But now we have to challenge Rav's shita. It's not an klaf kedei lechtov parsha ketana shabit filin shi shema Yisrael, right? So the fact that we teach klaf, that the minimum size for a klaf is one parsha of the tefillin, which is Shema Yisrael. That seems to imply that with a klaf we write the tefillin, but not the duchsustus, and we weren't teaching the duchsustus shir as being one parsha of the tefillin, le mitzvah. No, that was only taught to say that the ideal way of writing it is with a klaf. However, if you wrote it with a duchsustus, then it's still kosher. And they're the same shiur. We weren't teaching you that the size of the klaf is the tefillin to exclude that that's the size of the duchsustus. We were just teaching you that the best way to write the tefillin is with a klaf and not with a duchsustus. But still, duchsustus is valid. Tashima, halach lemoshe misinai, tefillin al klaf mezuzah duchsustus. I can disprove that from the following. We learn halacha Moshe Mitzinai that tefillin is written on a klaf and a mezuzah is written on a duchsustus. Klaf b'makom basar, klaf b'makom basar, duchsustus b'makom se'ar. Right, and the difference is that the klaf is the innermost part of the leather that is close to the flesh, and the duchsustus is the outermost part of the leather which is close to the hair of the animal. L'mitzvah, that too was taught in order to teach you the ideal way of making it, but not to say that a duchsustus is pasul for tefillin. In which case, it makes sense that the shiur is the same, enough to write a small paragraph. The Shema Vatanya, Shina Apostle, but didn't we teach that if you deviate from that which we taught, that is Apostle, a mezuzah. Now that was taught about a mezuzah, meaning you can't write a mezuzah with a klaf. However, you're allowed to write a tefillin with a duchsustus. Wait, but didn't we teach in another braita that whether you deviated from this one or that one, it's going to be pasul? So that would mean that if you wrote the mezuzah with a klaf or the tefillin with the duchsustus, it's going to be pasul. Idea mezuzah. Actually, both of those things we're talking about mezuzah. Va'de chatvinu aklaf makum se'ar. Inami aduchsustus b'makom basar, right? So they're both actually bazeh u bazeh are both talking about the mezuzah, right? And they're two different things that are going to be puzzled by the mezuzah, right? If you write on a klaf. Even if you write on the outside of the klaf, which is closer to the se'ar, puzzle. And if you write on the duchsustus, even if you write on the outside. On the inside of the duchsustus, which is closer to the basar, it's going to be pasul. So you can only write on the duchsustus, which is on the outside of the outermost part of the leather for the mezuzah. But if you write on the inside of the outermost part of the leather, or the outside of the innermost part of the leather, that's going to be pasul. And that's what we're trying to teach you. V'bayit ema, or you could suggest a different answer entirely. Shina bezeh bezeh tanaihi, right? That maybe it's referring to tefillin, but it's actually subject to a tanaic dispute. The Tanya, Shina Bazeo Bazeo Puzzle. As we learned in a Braita, where you differentiate from this or from that, it's gonna be Puzzle. Rabbi Acha, Machshir, Mishum Rabbi Acha, Bar Chanina. And Rabbi Acha says, no, if you change from this or that, it's actually fine, it's still valid, B'di'eved, which is taught in the name of Rabbi Acha Bar Chanina, V'amile Mishum Rabbi Yaakov, Bar Rabbi Chanina. Alternatively, maybe he taught in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Bar Chanina, so maybe it's just subject to a Tanaic dispute as to whether or not it's valid, but still there is a Shita that says it's valid. Rav Papa Amar, Rav Damar Ketanai, Ketana Debe Menashe, actually, Rav's shita just follows Tana de Menashe. As they taught in Tana de Menashe, if you wrote it on a paper, or if you wrote it on a cloth, it's going to be invalid. However, if you wrote it on a cloth, or on a gvil, or on duchsustus, it's gonna be kasher, it's gonna be valid. So clearly, Tana ben Menashe says that if you write something on a klaf, or on a duchsustus, it's going to be valid. And Rav's following his shita, right? But what exactly are we talking about? Katva ma. guy, what did he write? Ilema mezuzah, mezuzah aklaf mikatvinan. If you say, oh, he wrote a mezuzah, can you write a mezuzah on a klaf? I thought we determined that you're not allowed to write a mezuzah on a klaf. Elav tefillin. All right, there must be talking about you wrote tefillin, in which case, if you write tefillin on a klaf or on a dechsustis, seemingly it's okay. That's according to Tana de Menashe, in which case Rav's just following Tana de Menashe, which you're allowed to write klaf or write tefillin on both a klaf or a dechsustis. However, one second, that's difficult, right? Why? Right? Sorry, I think I skipped it. Mezuzah aklaf mikatvinan, right? So who would write a mezuzah on a klaf? That's why you know we're not going to talk about. You're not talking about a mezuzah. Elav tefillin, right? You're going to be talking about tefillin. I said that, right? And then, but we challenge it by saying, otamech tefillin agvil mikatvinan, right? But according to your shita, are you allowed to write tefillin on a gvil? You're not allowed to write tefillin on a gvil. In which case, we can't be talking about tefillin. Meaning, wonderful, it seems like we'd be talking about tefillin for the klaf and the duchsustas, because we can't be talking about a mezuzah, but we can't be talking about tefillin because a gvil can't, because tefillin, you're not allowed to write on a gvil. Elakitanya hebisefer Torah. Rather, here we are talking about a Sefer Torah, right? And that's what we're talking about, not tefillin. Hey, rather, a Sefer Torah can be written on a klaf, a dechsustis, or a gvil. Lim misayale. But maybe we can lend support for Rav Shita, meaning you can't support it from Tana de Menashe, but you can support it from, maybe from other places. Giyotzebo, tefillin shebalu, v'sefer Torah, shebala, ein osin mehen mezuzah, lefisha ein moridin mekdusha, chamor lekdusha kala. Right? So it was said about a tefillin or, a sefer Torah that kind of wore out, you're not allowed to make a mezuzah out of it, right? Because you can't bring it down from a higher level of kedusha to a lower level of kedusha. Tefillin and sefer Torah are higher than a mezuzah. Tama de ein moridin, hamoridin osin. So the only reason is you're not allowed to bring it from a higher level to a lower level, right? But clearly, if you were allowed to bring it from a higher level to a lower level, you'd be allowed to, right? In which case, seemingly you can write on the same parchment, on the same material. Dichtiva amai, lav dichtiva aduchsustus. Now, are we not talking about a case where you wrote the Sefer Torah or you wrote the Tefillin on a duchsustus such that it can be used for a mezuzah? Because if you didn't write it, because you wrote it on a cloth, then there's no havamina that you could use it for a mezuzah. Rather, you must have written on a duchsustus, and Tefillin can be used for a duchsustus. Lo, no, you can't prove them there. Dichtiva ala cloth. Rather, you wrote on a klaf. Mezuzah klaf mikatvinan. Are you allowed to write a mezuzah on a klaf? You can't bring a proof from there, because who says that you're allowed to write a mezuzah on a klaf? Right? Ain. Actually, yes, you are allowed to write a mezuzah on a klaf, and this whole thing just got turned over on its head. Vatanya, and again, Vatanya here is to support and not to chat and not to disprove. Vatanya, katva ala klaf ala niyar vala matlit psula. Right, so according to the Tanakhama, you're not allowed to write mezuzah on a klaf, on a niyar or a matlit, on a paper or on a cloth. Amar Mishum ben Elazar, Rabbi Meir haya kotva ala klaf. Rabbi Meir would actually write it on a klaf mipnei shemishna merit, because a klaf kept better. So Rabbi Meir would use a klaf to write a mezuzah, which just blows up the whole sugya, because now we see that you're allowed to write a mezuzah on a klaf. Hashta da ati. And now the Gemara says, well, now that you've arrived at such a conclusion that we have a shita that we follow that suggests that you're allowed to write a mezuzah on a klaf, l'rav nami lotema duchsustus tareu kiklaf. So now you can no longer challenge Rav's shita when he says that the duchsustus is like the klaf. Ela ema klaf areu kiduchsustus ma duchsustus kotvin alav mezuzah av klaf kotvin alav mezuzah. Right? Rav says a duchsustus is like a mezuzah, right? A dechsustis is like a klaf. And we said, oh, just like a klaf can be used for tefillin, dechsustis can be used for tefillin. And then we've just been spending the last 25 minutes saying whether or not that was true or not true. However, the moment you say that tefillin can be written on a klaf, then just say when Rav says that klaf was like a dechsustis, he didn't mean to say that you can write tefillin on a dechsustis. What he meant to say is that you can write a mezuzah on a klaf, in which case there's no challenge to Rav's shita. He's just following Rabbi Meir, so he compares klaf to duchsustis, and that they can both be used for mezuzah.